Hello and welcome to the Max Mu Podcast, a weekly podcast about theater and performing arts in New York City. This is Lindsay Behrens. This is the third and final episode devoted to the January theater festivals in New York City. We saw some amazing theater over the past couple of weeks. And in this episode, we get extremely excited about a particular show. And this excitement causes us to get a little goofy and a little giggly. I think those are fair statements of some of the behavior on the show. So I just want to warn you that that's on this episode. We start things off by talking about the show that I'm speaking of. We do so for about 10 minutes. And then we go into all of the other wonderful, and in some cases not so wonderful, shows that we saw over the course of the festivals. But then at the end, we return to the original show and talk about it for another 10 minutes. I hope you get excited about the shows we talk about and about the artists that we talk about, and I hope you seek them out and go and enjoy their work when it hopefully returns to New York with encore engagements. Enjoy the show. There's only one set of rules, which is you don't talk until I press record.
I didn't know you were. How do we know? It's secret back there.
Hello, Lindsay. How is your morning?
I just sat down.
Jesus.
It's early. I would like a bright red light flashing.
We do need a record button. You may begin.
Can we just start talking now? Is that the deal?
Now there's all this pressure.
Now
that we know we're being recorded, we've lost all of the energy.
It's all
That's
gone.
Because you were pre-talking.
Lindsay was yelling at us before she hit record because we started to maybe allude to some of the things we were going to discuss today.
Because there was a lot of enthusiasm in your voice, and I wanted to make sure that was captured for posterity.
She's like, vacuum up that enthusiasm and save it for later.
It's actually just because I made all my trains and there was no line at Starbucks. That's where the enthusiasm was coming from. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I know what I'm talking about.
I couldn't sleep last night. I was so excited for this.
Should we do a little background on what I think we're all about to talk about?
First, we should do introductions.
Okay.
Nicole, who are you?
Because there are still rules. Hi, it's Nicole from Mildly Bitters Music.
Who are you, Jack?
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Jack. I work at New York's Public Theater. My views are my own.
And I'm Lindsay of the Maximu Podcast.
All right.
And this is our final episode. Sort of, mostly, final episode discussing the New York City theater festivals. There are still a couple of shows to be seen that I think we'll probably talk about next week. Jack won't be here. David will be. We'll be talking more about our regular theater going. But it has been an incredible 2 weeks.
Amazing.
Like, life-changing. Like,
yeah.
I didn't think, like, when you started that you're like, we're going to do January festivals. And I never really went to them before and all this stuff. I didn't think my life would end up where it is right now today, having not done. I mean, this is just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Let's get to it.
Woo-hoo!
Tell us, Nicole.
So, we all saw a show. And actually, Lindsay and I saw the show first and then forced Jack to go see it.
Like, aggressively. I have never been... I've never felt more violated by a recommendation in my life. It was like, cancel your shit. You're going to call your mom? Fuck your mom. No. You're going to see this show today.
We might have been a little heavy-handed.
Yeah.
But let's just say, Jack, was it warranted?
Well, let's get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Let's have Nicole say what the fuck it is we're talking about.
Okay, so we all saw this show called, well, and this is the hard thing, it's either You Were Nowhere or You Were Now Here. It's all one word, all in capital letters, an experimental piece by Andrew Schneider, which was part of the Coil Festival.
Correct.
Well, anything else to add?
I mean, there's so much. I plan to only talk about this today and nothing else.
Nicole's speechless reaction, I think, is very apropos,
mm-hmm.
because... it ended, and Nicole and I were sitting there, and we were silent, and I just went like this.
Yeah. No, that's pretty
good. Head-exploding gesture.
Yeah, head-exploding gesture for those not watching the video.
And no one in the theater left the theater. Like, that's the part of it that I was like, no one's leaving. No, none of us want to leave. Like, we are... like, this is, for me, one of the definitive theater events of my life, and there are only so many. There's, like, I can probably count them on one hand,
mm-hmm.
and this is now actually one of them.
Yeah.
So say just a little bit about what it's about.
So it's a one-man show about the concept of time. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Schneider was formerly the technology guy with the Wooster Group. Mm-hmm. And so he's created this like wearable technology, which he controls with his body. And so it's a real integrated project of technology and theater. But I think as we've all sort of come to experience a lot of theater lately, technology has become kind of a crutch. Everybody throws up a projection. They're like, oh, this will be great. I won't have to build a set. I'll just make a big LED. and this show uses the technology as sort of the core to express the experience of time. And at least for me, that's what the show is about. It's about the audience and performer living this experience of time. Like, if you could, and you're going to hate this reference, like, it is like getting in the TARDIS with Doctor Who. I mean, it is, and you leave, and, you know, he takes his little companions into space, you go, you do something, you come back to Earth, and you're like, I can't live my life here on Earth anymore because I've just seen what you've shown me, Doctor Who. That is the experience that Andrew Schneider gives you.
And without giving too much away, this is at the Invisible Dog Theater, and that theater is bigger on the inside, as it turns out. Linda, do you want to say anything about the piece?
I just love it so much.
I have a crush on it. I think that's what I've decided. Like, yeah.
So I just saw this yesterday as we're recording, and Lindsay and Nicole had already seen it.
Twice.
And was just like, you need to go to this. So to explain my thoughts, I'm going to tell a little bit of a story. Do you guys feel like a story?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I had all of this lovely encouragement and recommendation. I've never seen Nicole more excited about, I think, anything. So I was like, okay, so I canceled my tickets to another show that I was going to go see so I could go see this.
Oh, wow.
And everything Nicole is describing is right. She doesn't want to say more because part of the sensational aspect of this show is how often it messes with your expectations and what you think is possible in a theater. I sat down in a chair in a crappy warehouse next to what appeared to be some sort of lotion factory. It's Brooklyn. It's very close to the F train. You understand. You just got to have. There's lotion outside. It was wonderful. I sit in the theater and the first part of it is the first like 20 minutes or so was one of the best things I've seen in this festival period, which is saying something because what I should have said at the beginning was I think this has been the best year for festivals since I've been in New York seeing these festivals. And then something happens in the show, which we will never, ever tell you what it is until you see it, and hopefully you'll get a chance to see it somewhere. But what happens from that point on, that is as much a discussion of time as it is about perception, as it is about depression and loss, as it is about alcoholism. It's there. I saw however many shows last year. I didn't think it was possible to be surprised by theater anymore.
Exactly.
I thought I knew all the rules. I thought I knew how every rabbit came out of every hat in every circumstance. Still can love shows, but mm-hmm. still having a sort of an insider's perspective on how something like that is made. No idea how Andrew did some of the things that were done here. It reminded me why I love theater. It reminded
Absolutely.
Me why I go and sit in a box next to a lotion factory for a living. It is so that I can watch that warehouse get turned into a magical box of light and sound and feeling. And it's one of the best things I've ever seen. It's one of the it's one of the most crisp, clear, and just goddamn genius expressions of what theater is and why theater is exciting and why it has excited the human race for centuries. End song. That's all I want. I mean, it's just if it how did he do that?
I'm gonna cry. I'm gonna actually cry. Like, it is, there's it's so
we've
hard.
All joined a cult, by the way.
It's so hard to talk about because it is that pure theater heroin rush. It is this, it just takes over your body and takes over your mind, and you don't even have to know what's happening. Like, I was in that first sort of 20 minutes of it, and I'm like, I'm mad this is going to end. This is going to end at some point, and I'm going to be really, really upset that it's going to be over. And we're all still having a hard time, a little bit in withdrawal here, not having an opportunity. Like, I want to see it every day. I want to see it all the time. Like, it's it's so crazy because it is so... I mean, it takes you to places you didn't know you could go. And it's so hard to get back to that sort of childhood joy, that kind of escape and beauty. And he's just, he's talking about all of these things that are so important and meaningful while being funny and inventive. And so, you know, we're talking about this technology, we're talking about all these things, but there is just sort of the pure humanity of it too. Like, that never gets lost in the experience. And that is actually critical to the experience. Like, we are all humans together in this journey.
Yeah. There's something about theater as being the harmony of all of these individual arts of writing, of performance, of sound and light and set and movement, all of these things. And this was one of the purest expressions of that harmony that I think I've ever seen. You'll forgive us if we're sounding incredibly hyperbolic on this podcast, but it's really that good. I mean, it's really something else.
And forgive us for being super vague because the joy and the beauty and the creativity here is so incredible. And to damage that in any way, like, I thought Alexis Holosky's review in the Times did a fantastic job of walking that line of sort of sharing the enthusiasm without revealing too much. And I know critics, you know, often don't quite know where those lines are. And I was like so afraid to even write about it, but I couldn't not write about it because it just was so important to me.
And I shortly afterward I ran into someone who was familiar with the piece and said, "Hey, do you want to know how he did it?" And I went, "No." Which was the first time I think I've ever, like, every time I've ever seen, like, a magic trick or something, I've always been like, I want to know how they did that right now. How did they do that? I don't want to know how Andrew and his band of merry men and ladies accomplished what they accomplished at The Invisible Dog. Closing today, I believe, or was it last night?
I saw the last show.
Man, all right.
Under the wire, just right there, yeah.
Dang.
Well, keep an eye out for it. I'd be very surprised if this didn't return in some capacity. The Twitter sphere has been abuzz with Andrew, when are you bringing this back? When is it coming back? And just a really strong response that I think we share, obviously. So keep an eye out for it, because it's worth catching for sure. And we saw lots of other stuff that was great. It's hard to talk about in the same
conversation.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, all you other artists. I mean, it's not that you aren't great and wonderful on your own merits at various times. It's just like this. It's like I'm marking this, you know, date in the calendar and measuring my life after it as a totally different person. Like, these are the kind of shows that, like, spin my life out into a new direction, into a new experience, a new way of looking at the world. And it is so rare, but it does sort of go back to that concept of, like, and this is why live performance needs to keep happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also why it never will stop happening, because there's no way to replicate this in any non-physical way.
Totally.
Yeah. And it's an experience. You have to be there.
Yeah.
No cell phones went off. I don't think I heard an unwrapped candy. I mean, everybody was so in it.
Not to mention that, again, this is a festival crowd. And at least the night I was there, I was looking at an audience full of theater snob types and theater professionals and a lot of, it should be said, artists from other festival shows. They're like, oh, yeah, those guys from that thing and that lady from that thing. Yeah. And so all of these conjurers in their own way sitting there being utterly floored by what they watched. And I actually spoke to a couple of them afterwards at a show, and they were just like, you know, we've been doing – who did theater sort of like what Andrew does. Mm-hmm. They're like, we have no idea how he did that, and we're all just depressed now.
Oh. It was
just, and inspired, you know.
Right.
It's just – yeah.
I think that's a good summary. I'm depressed and inspired.
Yeah.
All right now as I sit here.
Yes. I yesterday went through all 7 stages of grief over the fact that I was not going to get to see that show again, because Nicole and I went twice and the first time had no idea what we're in for. And so it just washed over us like giant waves of wonderfulness. But the second time I was so excited to see it. I sort of was like jumping on. I was too excited. And then I realized that I wasn't going to get to see it again, and I was sad.
I believe suicide was discussed.
My goodness.
No joke.
There was anger. There was bartering. All seven stages.
Wow, that's intense. But we should talk about other things we have seen in the festival.
Yes, we should. So, all Jack, right. Why don't you pick what you would like to talk about?
God,
next.
Well, so here's the thing. So, in the last 2 weeks, I have seen a total of 24 festival shows.
Wow.
Three more today. So, by the time all the festivals wrap up, I will have seen 27. And I'm very tired. But also feeling very good. There's too many things to mention. And, you know, again, like we said last week, you know, we're at the end of the festival period, so you won't get to see any of these shows necessarily. But these are artists that you should track. And next time they're in town with anything, you should check them out. So I guess since last we met our heroes, I've seen some amazing stuff. Toshi Regan's adaptation of Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower at Under the Radar Festival at the Public Theater. Toshi is a friend of the public, and Joe's Pub in particular, has also appeared in the Under the Radar Festival in the past. This is this sort of gospel opera about the parable, based on the Parable of the Sower. Just a transcendent, sort of soulful, wonderful theatrical concert experience. For those who don't know Toshi, she is sort of a mix of gospel and soul and traditional American folk music with a little bit of blues, a lot of punk rock thrown in there too. She sort of defies description. That was great. What else? Taylor Mack is doing his workshop versions of his History of Popular Music, which will eventually be a 24-hour concert that is celebrating and analyzing and only the way that Taylor Mack can, the history of popular music in the United States. What's currently going on is the 1900s to the 1920s, the three-hour retrospective of those decades. After that, the 1930s to the 1950s, and a week from today, Sunday, he'll be doing a six-hour marathon of the 1900s to the 1950s. So
let's pause there. Let's say that again. He's going to do a 24-hour concert.
Yeah.
I don't even think that's humanly possible for one person to perform basically continuously with, you know, the necessary breaks, but otherwise continuously a 24-decade history of pop music. Now, we've talked about Taylor Mack on this podcast numerous times. He is a brilliant, wonderful performer who is both technically excellent and can just drill to the core of an emotional moment so quickly and take you from hilarity to sadness within just seconds. Mm-hmm. Nicole and I just saw that last night. It's very good. It's a very different kind of performance. We were totally confused when we got there because the ushers were like, it's 3 hours, there's no intermission. And we were like, what are you talking about?
They're also like, there's audience participation, you should check your coats. It was all of these instructions that we were not,
we were just
like
what are you talking about? This is a typical proscenium theater. We have seats in row H on the end. Like, we're not going to be participating in anything. Oh, yes, we are. And it's wonderful audience participation. And he addresses it very directly from the get-go about what he's doing and why he's doing it. And I am very at ease with him as a performer already, but for him to walk people through that and to address the difference between a cabaret show and a pop concert and performance art, and he is very funny in a line he repeats over and over throughout the course of the performance about how you might like it, you might not like it, and both of those things are okay, and that doesn't mean that the performance on its face is failing. I just loved that so much. I mean, I will be signing up for the 24-hour concert. I do not know if it'll be possible to be an audience member for 24 hours, but I would not miss that for the world.
It will. It's going to be really interesting from what I know about it. He talks a little bit about it in these workshop performances, but basically he will start in the 1760s, I believe, and with 24 musicians, and every hour, each hour will correspond to a decade. He will lose a musician until the final decade when it's just him alone on stage. Certain decades will be populated by lullabies so that you can get a nap.
Nice.
He, of course, will not. And the thing to also say about Taylor Mack, besides being an amazing singer and performer and interpreter of popular music, some of which you know very well, some of which you don't, is that he reimagines these songs in ways that sort of filter our perceptions of these decades through what was actually going on at the time in a really brilliant way. the thing that's not said about Taylor Mack enough is, yes, he's funny. Yes, he's entertaining. He's also, I think, one of the smartest performers working today.
Absolutely.
The way that he can look at a song and divine what it meant to people at the time it was written and how we can interpret it now in a new and perhaps more rebellious way or more relevant way is kind of extraordinary. I think the world of him. So, yeah. And then the only other thing I'll talk about is Audio Abramovich.
Oh, wait. I have one more thing on Taylor Mack.
Oh.
His interpretation of Danny Boy.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
I mean, is a song that's in, I mean, it's so overdone and so overseen. I'm always like, I don't understand the emotional point of this song. The choices he made to reimagine that song and make it heartbreaking in ways I didn't think possible, like that for me is like, I'm signed up for the 24-hour show. Fine, I'm in my pajamas. I've got my sleeping bag. Whatever you want me to do, Taylor Mack, I am on board. I'm on board wherever you want to take me, however you want to teach me this queer history of America. Like, I'm in it. I don't care. Like, just go. Tell me anything.
And just on a personal note, like, I just love the way he deconstructs gender and he critiques queer history in the United States and the domination of the gay white male, and brings women's issues and diverse people from a very diverse gender perspective into the conversation. I just love that. I just think it's so, we need it so much in the theater, because the theater has this, there's this sense of, like, we might have diversity issues when it comes to women and people of color, but, like, we're super gay friendly, but we're just only gay friendly to, like, one type of gay. And so I just, him bringing that conversation to that audience, I think, is so wonderful.
And him, I mean, because there are moments in the show where he's like, okay, I need all the men 14 to 40 to come down on stage because, you know, these are the people who are sent off to war or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And even then I was like, oh, wow, you're splitting the audience in a gender binary way, because that was the choice of history. But how he then, you know, and he's like, I don't need to say it, but if you did he say
self-identified?
Right, yeah. If you're a self-identified woman, like, you're going to do this, and he's like, I don't need to say that, but I'm going to say it. You know, I mean, that kind of space, like, even those choices and making that speech isn't something you would see in the, like, Patti LuPone version of, like, let me teach you about the, you know, 1910s. Like, and I've seen a lot of cabaret where it's like, I used to go see Andrea Marcovici all the time at the Oak Room, and she'd do these really wonderful pieces about sort of where these songs come from in history. And I love that, because we don't have a lot of that perspective, but, you know, she told it from a very traditional point of view. And I love that we're getting this other point of view.
Yeah. Audio Abramovich, Jack.
Yes. Sorry. I didn't mean to step on you guys there.
No, I apologize.
Audio Abramovich, which I talked about last week, which is also the Under the Radar Festival, concluded last night. That is Reggie Watts' take on Marina Abramovich's The Artist is Present, where you go into a room for 5 minutes with Reggie Watts, and he composes a song just for you, using all of his looping and synthing gadgets, you know, the high-tech music that the kids are messing around with today. I got to do it. It was incredibly fun. It was nice to sort of, like, have a moment with an artist that I really respect, even though, like, I knew he was going to do 50 of those, you know, and I was just one of those, one in, you know, a large number. It felt very, very personal. And I got a song written for me that is the greatest short joke I've ever received. And I have a recording of it now. And a new nickname, which is lovely.
Are you going to share the new nickname with us?
The nickname is Little Tiny Mouse, because that is the name of the song. Little Tiny Mouse. And maybe at the end of the podcast, I'll sing it for you, because I can't get the chorus out of my head. Reggie, I mean, he's the other thing to say, though, is that, like, he's not just, like, having all his toys and sitting down looking at you and then just fucking around musically for 5 minutes. Like, I was so impressed that, like, the song he wrote for me had a, you know, chorus and a bridge and verses. It was like this weird trip hop, you know, sort of gothy kind of thing that had an incredible musical arc to it. I was just so impressed with his improvisation skills. Did you guys get a chance to do that?
Aww. No.
It was fun. Anyway.
I want to talk about Sorry Robot, which is the Mike Iveson musical about two robots who are being reprogrammed to have greater emotional range. The robots are played by Mike Iveson and Nikki Preso, and they are wonderful. They're so funny. And this show includes 9 songs, and some of the songs are really hilarious, one of which I would like to reference specifically.
Ooh.
Excuse me while I get my notes.
Visual aids, yeah.
No, this is not a visual aid. Don't make our listeners think they're missing out.
Yeah, there's a secret video feed.
This song is called Tears on the Treadmill.
That's wonderful.
Oh my God, it was so good.
And the lyrics are, tears on the treadmill, tears on the treadmill, tears on the treadmill, because I told you goodbye, and then I went to the gym.
It just was very relatable. I don't know.
It was so funny.
To the point. I wonder what it's about.
There are some slow spots in this show, but overall, I thought it was so weird and so delightful. And he does have an Indiegogo campaign to raise money to do cast recording, which I hope he's able to raise the funds, because I would love a copy of that song in particular. That song in particular. Okay, Nicole.
Wait, what am I talking about?
Whatever you want.
Yeah, man.
Okay, well, let's talk about Her's a Queen, which is the Neil Medlin Champagne Jerry piece that we saw at American Realness. Because of our crazy devotion to Andrew Schneider, we needed to shuffle up our schedule a little bit. And so we didn't get to see Brave New Girl, but we did get to see this other piece called Her's a Queen, which is sort of a companion piece to the Brave New Girl one, which was going to be about Miley Cyrus. This one, Her's a Queen, is about Britney Spears. And so this is the first time I've ever seen Neil Medlin perform. And we got to see all of them, that's for sure.
All of them upside down.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. If you ever wondered what happens with genitals upside down, this show will answer some of those questions, I guess.
Fact.
I'm like still in the midst of writing my review about it, but you know, he's interested in the Blackout album, the Britney Spears Blackout album, and I was surprised that, like, he wasn't... I thought he was just going to portray Britney Spears. I thought it was going to be kind of... I thought he was going to, like, recreate, you know, some sort of performance of Britney Spears. That was, I guess, my anticipation of his pop star series. But ultimately, I think he kind of took aspects of the Britney Spears universe, sort of the breakdown, the sexuality, the sort of purity, abstinence concepts of this girl and her life and what we know about her, and kind of blended that all together into a performance experience. And he sings her songs, he does the choreography, but there's all this other sort of fairy tale stuff happening, sort of oddball fairy tales and weird stories and jokes about bears and nuns and things happening at the same time, which for me wasn't wholly connected, and I have still been trying to kind of figure out how it all fits together. But he has this really sort of warm and sweet stage presence that I was like, I don't care if I'm not getting this. I'm kind of just interested in watching you and what you're doing here. And it really made me wish I had seen more of the pop star series, which was getting its North American debut at American Realness, all 7 pieces together. So he's absolutely on my list now as like a performance artist I need to go see again and see more of his work. So I thought it was a good introduction to his oeuvre.
Yeah, I felt the same way. Like, I wasn't totally sure about that particular piece and what it all meant, but I was intrigued by him as a performer and definitely wanted to sort of see more. Wish we'd had more time to see more of the other parts of that particular series and also just more of his performance in general. He was just very inviting in a way that was just intriguing, to repeat a word. Jack, why don't you talk about the commentators?
Oh, okay. So at the Under the Radar Festival, there is a group called Stan's Cafe that was primarily there for a show that they did called The Cardinals, which was...
Boo.
Ooh, all right, fine.
Sorry. I couldn't hold that one back.
Which was a show that was about a group of cardinals, Catholic cardinals, who are trying to recreate the story of the Bible using puppets, and their Muslim stage manager also. So you see her kind of running around getting them their props while they put together this very high concept, very ridiculous sort of retelling of the Bible. So that was one of the reasons they were there, but they also did a one night only performance of a show that they do around the world called The Commentators, where two guys who run Stan's Cafe stood on the balcony of the lobby of the Public Theater for 4 hours and commented on the goings-on of the lobby as if it were a sporting event. And they have these sort of like very light British accents where they talk about it as if they're talking about golf or something. And they're hilarious. It was interesting because when they started, like, the lobby was packed with people going to see 8 different shows, and you couldn't really hear them. But as the lobby started to thin out, and I was there for the full 4 hours, as the lobby started to thin out, you could hear them better, and they were just – it was just a lovely, my kind of stupid, funny idea. They never, you know, broke a sweat. They never ran out of things to talk about. They never ran out of jokes. There were amazing callbacks. One of the things, as a staff member of the Public Theater, they had in front of them the roster of who was working in front of house that night. And so they had them, and they had all their names, and were like commenting on like how they would greet people at the door, and how our information desk attendant would give information. It was just this just stupid high concept thing that just tickled me so deeply. I had a great time at it.
We were only able to stop by for a minute. This is another casualty of the Andrew Schneider obsession. But for the few minutes we were there, it did seem just really funny and delightful, and but casual, and not – it didn't take itself too seriously.
No, not at all.
Which was sort of my only reservation, was like, oh, God, are they going to be like really, I don't know, strict about the way that they are having this conversation? But they weren't. They were really funny, and they didn't care that people were standing around having conversations at the same time as them, and they're just focused on the task at hand and – seemed to be quite hilarious.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, you know, amazing how they could pitch the momentum of it too. Because, you know, there was a lot of time when people were just walking around and they're just sort of speculating about why people would come to the theater in the first place and things like that. And then all of a sudden someone would spill their wine and our cleaning crew would come in to clean it up, and they would launch into it like David Beckham on a breakaway, you know, like commenting furiously. I was telling people that now. I was like, I just want to hire these guys and like put them in Grand Central Station.
Yeah.
At rush hour for like 5 hours.
That would be amazing.
They're super fun. So book them for your next party or bar mitzvah.
The other thing I wanted to say was not mean-spirited. Like, there were times when they were making fun of people, but it was all very good-natured. There was no meanness to it.
No, not at all. Yeah.
I'd only like to explain my boo comment. I wasn't booing at the religion or the Cardinals as a concept. We did happen to see that show, and it was really disappointing and probably one of the worst things I saw during the festivals. And so I was a little nervous about the commentators. Like, I lost a lot of my enthusiasm for the commentators because the Cardinals was too long and not dramaturgically strong, but it did have like 2 minutes of beauty within the hour and a half of sitting there. And it's one of those interesting theater experiences where I'm like, is the hour and a half worth the 2 minutes? No, not for me. But but there really was, you know, it was this puppet show happening, and we saw the staging around the puppet show and the stage manager running around and the Cardinals running around before they would, you know, set up each of the tableaus. And there was a moment where the stage manager went and did her call to prayer. And it was just this beautiful, quiet moment where the Cardinals were all like running around and looking for props. And they're like, wait, what's going on? Where is she? And then it was like, she's off in the corner praying. And they all had to kind of stop and be a little lit, you know, put out by like their puppet show having to stop for this. But it said more about sort of religion and devotion and faith than the other hour and a half of the Cardinals, which I think was kind of the point, but it just wasn't enough.
Okay, anyway, well, it got a pretty harsh review in the Times, so if you want more on that, you can check that out. Okay, I want to talk about Timor and the Dime Museum, since I previewed them on our original festival podcast. This is a punk, goth, glam band from L.A.
Oh, this is the Adjective Show. I remember this. Yeah.
They did a performance at Joe's Pub, but it was part of the Prototype Festival. I've seen these guys several times before. This is very consistent with their past performances. They previewed a requiem that they are going to return to New York to perform at a undisclosed festival location in Brooklyn in the fall, which they were very strict about not saying, but which we can only conclude, I think, that it's BAM, right?
That's our guess.
That's our guess. We don't know. I would strongly recommend checking these guys out when they get back here. They are so entertaining. They are so fun. Nicole, you're with me. This is your first time. What did you think?
Yeah. I mean, my only hesitation is their Requiem is about climate change.
Nicole has an issue with theater about climate change. She does not believe in climate change. She doesn't want to be preached to about it.
I hate the earth. I recycle. What more do you want from me? Why are you taking over all of my theater? Sorry, I'm a terrible, terrible person. You all know that already.
It's not preachy. And honestly, it could be about fucking
anything. Yeah, I have no idea that it's actually about the
content of their songs. It doesn't matter.
No, there was such a, I mean, there was such a sort of lovely, crazy, weird stage presence. And, you know, just kind of high energy, weirdly darling. Like, it's just all of these adjectives that don't make any sense together. Sort of like punk, glam, rock, darling. Yes, all of that.
One of the things that I love about their band is it's four musicians and a lead singer. And they do not fit together in any way. It's like you created a band by taking the president of all the different clubs in high school, including the informal, like, hard rocker, like, stoner club, and the book lovers club. Like, this guy might run like an indie zine about books in Brooklyn, and the president of the science club, and the lead kid who loves musical theater and opera, and you put them in a band together, and you're like, it's not one of these things doesn't belong. It's like none of you go together, and yet together you make this bizarre, beautiful, hybrid-y music that just combines all these different elements. I think they're wonderful.
I know. I was like, is there polka happening? Like, there's all of this stuff that I was like, orally, you're like, this isn't what I was anticipating looking at these people. But at the same time, also, like, that's what makes them great. It's what makes them sort of unique and special, and that they're all bringing. And that I love that they're all sort of super uberly styled in all of their unique ways, but not uberly styled as an ensemble of, like, we're all so done together. You know, like, it feels like these clothes come from each of their individual weirdo closets.
And yet elements have been designed into them so that they are a unit.
Yeah. There's some shiny stuff.
There's some stuff that lights up.
I know that one guy.
What you're describing sounds like a hipster Village People. Like, this is amazing.
It's like, I mean, it's like if a Eurovision band, like, no one's going to get this reference, but like, it really is like the high school version of a Eurovision band. Like, there's weird neon, like, in somebody's clothing. There's the guy with super crazy dreadlocks. And Timur's from Kazakhstan. So, like, there is this very specific sort of European flavor to it all that you're just like, and there's polka. I don't understand.
They live in L.A., which they're all extraordinarily pale. There's no surfer dude. That member of the club is not included. Their geographical home notwithstanding. I don't know how they live in L.A. Timur must walk around in a giant umbrella.
I was going to say, he must have a parasol. He looks like he would own a parasol.
He looks like a vampire.
Yeah.
That's nothing but
an
a compliment.
Adorable vampire.
Yeah, that's nothing but a compliment.
An adorable vampire. Oh, I love this.
All right, Nicole, I think we got to do Blind Date Project.
So this is also part of the Coil Festival. It's an improv piece by this Australian actress, Bojana Novakovic. Sorry.
Nailed it.
Sorry. I thought I could get that one, and I just...
I'm impressed.
Sorry.
Actually, Bojana. If you are not seeing the name, there's a lot of accents on the top.
She's a Serbian-Australian actress who's now been on American television and various things. And she and her co-creator, Mark Winter, created this sort of improv project where she is a woman waiting at a bar for a blind date. And various actors play her counterpart in these scenes, and it's a different actor every night. They get a little bio about themselves ahead of time, and then both of them receive live direction through their phones, through text messages and phone calls from the director at the sort of back of this karaoke space where we were sitting at the Parkside Lounge. And sometimes they sing karaoke and audience members can sing karaoke. And there's the bartender who's also sort of semi-involved in the scenes. And it's funny because Liz and I were talking about this as well because she reviewed it for another publication and she saw a different actor. She saw Larissa Olenek as the date, and we saw Tom Lipinski, and we were sort of comparing notes of like, what did your actor get? Is it the same story? Is it a different story? And they all seem to be, you know, very slightly different biographies for each of the characters. But we were both surprised at how, like, I kind of thought it was going to be wacky and silly and a little stupid, but the stakes felt very, very real.
Totally.
And the performances, like, you know, each actor is going to have different, you know, sort of improv strengths. And I thought Tom Lipinski was doing the best he could. Like, I don't know what his background is professionally, but I don't know how much improv experience he has. And I felt like he had a little tick where he got nervous and wasn't sure what to do. He'd swear, which was sort of cute and whatever, and it created this character. But there was just this underlying realness to the desperation and experiences of these characters. And I know Lindsay was like totally anxiety maxed out watching nervous people be nervous with each other in a disastrous way. Is that fair?
All true. I'm vigorously shaking my head.
I don't want to put words in your mouth. But I liked it. I really did. And I don't think I left, you know, with a sort of profound sense of life. But I did leave in a moment where I was like, I wish the director had called a particular reveal earlier, because it suddenly at the end got very, very substantial and very engaging. And I wished we had seen more of that play out between the two characters of dealing with this piece of information.
Yeah, my anxiety notwithstanding, I actually really liked it. I thought it was quite well done. And I think it's the kind of thing that's actually much harder to pull off than it appears, because the thing I was struck by is here you have an actor, the guest actor who is different each night, showing up nervous, unsure of what's going to happen, not unlike you might feel if you were on a first date. And I was very interested in sort of dissecting, what are we seeing here? Are we seeing acting, or is this just genuine nervousness and anxiety about improv-ing a scene with somebody in front of a large room full of people? And I mean, I didn't get too hung up on that, but it was a sort of fascinating element to it. And when he was flirting with her, I was like, I was like, kind of like, I think you might actually be flirting with her. She's very cute. And then I was like, shut the fuck up, brain. Like, just watch the scene, you know? It was really fascinating. And I was uncomfortable, but in the same way that I would be uncomfortable if I were sitting next to two people who were on a first date and I was overhearing their conversation, I'd be like, oh my God, what are you doing, dude? Like, you're doing it all wrong.
I know. And he's like, I'm blowing it. We're all like, yeah, you really are. Like, there was a moment where he like, I think they're probably the first time he put his hand on her knee and she gave him a look that was like, I think we've all given that look where it's like, this is too soon. We haven't had enough drinks yet. We're not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when he goes to kiss her, oh my God, that was so great. She just did such an amazing job responding to that. And it did make me, like so many things, wish I could go back and see it with a different set of circumstances and a different performer, because I would just love to see how it is that things vary performance to performance and how it is that she's responding in the moment versus being directed to do certain things.
Right. Although it was funny because there was a moment where she's like super drunk and sort of falling down and he's trying to sort of pick her up off the bar stool, and he got the text message from the director like at that moment. So he's like, you could see like it flash across his face, like, it's my job to respond to this text message, but I also am holding a lady. So how do I hold her and reach over and grab my phone and check my message? Which, I mean, it sounds a little ridiculous to receive directions in that format, but because everybody is so screen focused at this point in life, it doesn't seem all that weird to watch a couple on a blind date sort of checking their phones constantly.
Not at all. Totally natural.
Yeah.
And there was part of me before we went where I wondered about that. Like, is that going to be intrusive? But no, actually it just looks like life.
Yeah.
All right. What an amazing 2 weeks of theater, y'all.
It's been something else. And what you guys were just talking about made me think about the festival in general, and one thing that kind of has jumped out at me, and that is that I really want to hire a neurologist to look at what happens to the brain when the carefully constructed Victorian rules of theater are broken or challenged in a space. Pretty much every show we've described in the past few weeks, and certainly today, are all shows that, like, tested our boundaries and made us question, particularly in the case of Andrew Schneider, what was going on, what our role in it was, how we were supposed to respond to something, the guilt or the voyeurism of seeing something that we perhaps are not traditionally supposed to see. I find that experience really fascinating, and I feel like it's kind of reconfigured my brain chemistry a little bit in how I see theater. And there's a part of me that's like, damn it, now I'm going to go spend the next several months sitting in a lot of very traditional theaters, seeing a lot of very traditional plays, and I will like a good many of them. But and I will slowly, this new rewiring will slowly return back to normal, and I'll just have to wait until January again, because I feel like I've gone through some either a cultish experience or some sort of, like, cleansing process where it's like all the bullshit baggage that comes with how you're supposed to go to the theater is gone right now, and it will come back, but I'm just trying to relish this moment so much.
I want to challenge you a little bit on that, because this type of theater exists in New York City continuously. It's hard to find.
Yeah.
It is hard to... The thing that the festivals do that's so great is they sort it for you.
Mm-hmm.
They go... Our artistic directors from all the theaters that put on these shows scour the earth, and they bring it all the best of it right here, and they put it in a very easy-to-navigate brochure.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the year, that theater exists in New York, and it disperses across New York, across the land, across the globe. And it's hard to find because you have to search for it, and you have to accept that it is – you're going to go see some things that are not going to be good in your search for – your one true love,
right?
The thing that's going to make your brain explode and rewire it. But that exists in New York all the time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I'm not, I recognize that, and it's that, but you're exactly right. One of the things I think that I'm processing right now is just the fact that these festivals not only curate them for you, but, like, there's kind of nothing else to do in New York theater during these 2 weeks of January.
Uh-huh.
I mean, institutional theaters are just starting their seasons up, you know, the new Broadway season just kicking. So it's like it's this lovely, easy way to have your brain scrambled.
Yeah.
And you want to go – I want to go do that again as often as possible. I know it will require some searching. I look forward to that. But I also am just sort of mourning the loss of having my brain forcibly rewired in a way that now I'm going to have to elect more so to do it throughout the year. I can't wait. It's sort of – you know, you eat at a really wonderful restaurant that changes the way you think about food. And then you go back and eat McDonald's because you're busy and you're tired, but you still think about that restaurant and you're going to go back, damn it. You're going to go back.
Well, it's not in like chasing a high. Like I was describing it to Nicole as, you know, chasing the dragon, that whole metaphor. And Nicole even mentioned the word heroin earlier.
ding, ding, ding.
Andrew Schneider, you're my heroin.
And, you know, that's what it is. You get something that's so strong and pure, and you just are constantly looking for that high again. And then you get into the depths of the spring theater season and all this commercial theater that is not satisfying. But thank God you have that original high to keep searching for.
Well, yeah. And I think for me, like I'm wondering how much it's going to change the math of what I see during the rest of the year. Like, do I... And this is sort of an ongoing question for me. Like, I have been getting into more... weird shit, as I like to call it. And, you know, do I start to just say, I'm not going to keep chasing certain off-Broadway houses or Broadway shows or whatever, because I want more of this stuff and I want to spend my time searching for more of this kind of stuff. But it's, you know, it's hard. It's hard when there is, you know, traditional theater and new writers coming up and people I want to keep track of and, you know, artists I'm following and actors I'm following and all these wonderful things. But... you know, you're sitting there, you sit in your seat, you get up, you clap, you do your thing, you walk out. And yeah, this experience for me has just changed I mean, it's been coming for a while, like, you know, doing the hug show that I did in Edinburgh and, you know, seeing all the Forest Fringe stuff we saw here in New York in October, like sort of progressively getting more and more into these sort of pure performance based works. It's hard. Like, and I think like maybe that's why after 200 shows last year in December, I was like, ugh. Theater, I'm so stupid, I'm not good. And now I'm like completely reinvigorated and thank God, because I was feeling a little low in December and this has like rejuvenated my like love of theater, the reason I go out, the reason I go looking for weird stuff, the reason, you know, to get me up sort of every day and just sort of like back into it, knowing like things like this are out there. And I wouldn't have known. I mean, we picked it out of a book. I don't even know why. Like, what about the description originally like struck me that I think like he mentioned Misconnections and I'm like, yep, I'm going to go see that one. Totally marketing. Like, I've like just a random piece of marketing somehow clicked with me and I've now had a life-changing experience.
Well, and the truth is, though, even though we have seen a lot of theater this week, percentage-wise, we did not see a very significant number of all the shows that were presented during festival season in New York City this January. There are shows that were great that no one sitting at this table saw.
I know.
Right. But to that end, I would like to ask a question to both of you. And I love what you just said, Nicole, by the way. It's just what a lovely way to start the year theatrically. Here we go, gang. Is, besides Andrew, what is one show or artist that you would want listeners to take extra special care to see post-festival season?
For me, it's Kenneth Collins and Temporary Distortion.
Oh, yeah.
Like, absolutely. And I think Adrian Truscott. I think those are two artists that I wasn't really – I mean – aware of, but not really aware of. And now I'm completely on board with, and, you know, I sort of jokingly said this to someone the other night, like, I'm really into durational work right now. like, snobby asshole that I am. And it's true. And I'm just like, I'm really excited. And maybe that's why the 24-hour song cycle for Taylor Mack is appealing on some level too, where it's like the weird marathon experience, the just, you know, giving over yourself to an artist who you're like, I'm just going to put my trust in you that you're going to steer this ship and we're not going to crash and maybe I'll have to take a nap, but okay, great. So I think those two artists for me, which I feel like are probably the same for you.
Yeah. Those two are definitely on my list. I've actually already been emailing people about Adrian Truscott's piece because I think that, she's just a really interesting artist that more people should know about.
And she's part of the Wawa Sisters, just so people know that she performs under that as well.
Especially as we're having a conversation in our culture about rape and about rape jokes and about Bill Cosby and all these things. I just think that it's easy for that conversation to become very focused on things that appear on TV and for people to miss the fact that live in our theaters, there's a element of this conversation that is so interesting and so critical and so emotional and so personal that, like, it's a shame that that can't be brought into the conversation, even though a limited number of people are getting to see it every night.
Yeah.
What about you, Jack?
Definitely top of my list is Dark Matter.
Yeah.
The duo, that Red Poetry is part of the incoming series, the festival within a festival at Under the Radar. I just think they're some of the smartest, most entertaining artists I've seen in a long time. I will definitely be seeing whatever they do next. Also shout out to Deconstructive Theater Company, also in the, incoming series, who did the Orpheus Variations in that festival. Trying to think who else just... You know, I already love Taylor Mack. I already love Toshi Regan. Already love Reggie Watts. So that's nothing new. Daniel Koren, I'll throw in there as well. I don't think I've spoken about him a lot. He was in the incoming series, did a sort of a one-man show. He's a comedian. He's actually very, if you like Reggie Watts and you want more of that, but in a different human being, Daniel Koren might be for you. I would check him out. He's all over YouTube and stuff. So I'm a newly minted fan of him. But yeah, but then, you know, then it's just Andrew, for God's sake.
I mean, just bow down at the altar. Like, I mean, talking about it, like, I have this crush. Like, it's sort of like, I just want to walk by the theater and see if the show's, you know, playing. Or if he's, like, hanging out in the corner. And it's like, it's just so, I mean.
Oh, hey,
you
man.
You know, I mean, how are you? Lovely show. And like, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy the, like, theater crush I have on that show. all consuming. Like, I want to just like make, draw little hearts around it and send it love letters. And...
Yeah. The only thing I think I enjoy more than the show itself is your love for it. Like, I actually, it makes me so happy when Nicole is reduced to tears while recommending something. You just have to sit there and go, all right, well, I'm gonna make a call. You know, like you have to do
move
that.
Move your
thing.
Schedule around, folks. I mean, Lindsay rode the G train back with me after the show to give you some indication of how much she was willing to sacrifice to keep talking about this.
I understand, Lindsay. That's in Brooklyn. You know that.
Trust me, I am fully aware.
Every stop, she's like, "Is this where I get out? Is this where I leave?" No,
never where you want to get out.
I was so
on the
confused about where I was and what direction I was going in. I promise not to spoil anything, but there are multiple times during this show that there are things that you don't expect. And the thing about the way it surprises you is, unlike many traditional theater experiences that I've had, is like, I'm surprised! And it's over. The surprises unroll in a way that is I've never experienced before. And it happens more than once that it unrolls. And for Nicole and I, that happened during the performance. And then we were on the G train and we were talking about it, which I'd voluntarily taken a train that I don't live on in a direction that is not going towards my home, so that Nicole and I could continue talking about this show. And we were so excited about it. And I was going to get off the train to transfer to another train, also that I don't live on. And this guy said, "What show are you talking about?" And Nicole and I were like, "What's it called?" And so Nicole pulls out her brochure to the show, and she says, "It's You Are Nowhere." And he says, "You are now here." And Nicole goes, "You are nowhere." And he says, "You are now here." And it was like another explosion. Like, my brain was just like, holy shit, the name of the show is two different things, and that is part of it. And this is 45 minutes later on the G train, and Nicole and I am like fucking freaking out on the train.
This is the last time we record this podcast this early. That was unbelievable, Lindsay. Are you going to be okay? Look at.
She's reliving the moment. It was pretty intense.
Was
it was, yeah. Well, this is like when I wrote my review. I was like, it's not even that there's sort of like theatrical expectations. It was like, I thought like maybe there wasn't gravity anymore. Like, he changed the way the world functioned, like with his little armbands. Like, I don't understand.
Also, Andrew, I know you're listening. Why don't you wear a shirt in this show?
We're not complaining.
No, that's not a complaint. I just want to know why.
I had some theories and you didn't like my theories.
Wait, I'm sorry. You saw that show full of more surprises than I've seen in any show ever. And that's the question you have?
It's a fair point, Jack.
The laws of physics were suspended. And you go, why isn't he wearing a shirt? I understand. You must be cold. I'm really concerned about Andrew.
It's because I can't wrap my brain around those bigger issues. So I have to like focus on something that I think I can just
tangible.
Get a response to without causing me too much shock.
All right. Yeah, I'm with you. It's God, I don't know what else to say about anything.
Even when we first saw it, like, there were some technical issues that we had to go back and see it a second time. And I was still convinced that those technical issues were part of the show. And then it turned out they weren't. But I'm now like, actually, I liked them better. I liked the first time seeing the first technical problems as part of the show. Andrew, if you're listening, you could add that back in. It would be really actually great.
But it's also special for us.
It is special for us. It only happened for us. Thank you. Thank you for breaking your show just for us. There's now some mooning going on.
It's amazing. So you guys are like the first day of summer. Look at this. Just a glow on this rainy New York winter night.
He signed my theater yearbook on my heart.
I will
he saved Nicole's tweets. It's the equivalent. It's the modern signing of a yearbook. Actually, he retweeted one of your tweets.
Did he?
You know what? We'll give his Twitter address at the end of the podcast like we do everyone else's, so everyone else can follow him and find out about future performances of his.
That's true.
Honorary member of the Max
Ask Me podcast.
We wish.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Andrew Schneider podcast. We hope you'll join us again next week, where we will talk about other shows that Andrew Schneider is working on.
Speculate
about his relationship status. Wonder if he'll ever return our texts.
We'll just...
That and David Levy next week on the Max Acute podcast.
We'll just live watch some of his YouTube videos and describe them to you.
This is getting insane. Oh my God. Insane.
I had to like save the YouTube video. I was like, I don't have time for this. I'm too emotional. I need a moment.
Like we gotta.
You know, he went on the team's road trip for Rose Velvis. Did you know that, Jack?
Jack has lost all respect for us now.
Tell me more. Like, when did I become the person trying to pull the podcast together? When did I become that person? I'm the cheeky little guy who says dumb shit. And now, oh my God.
Speaking of, if everyone has not seen the picture of Jack at the Taylor Mack show, sitting on the stage with a look of just sheer joy.
Yep.
You are just radiating joy in that photo behind a man dressed in the most bizarre outfit. I fucking love that photo.
It's a solid photo. It's in the paper of record. My mom's very pleased. You know that expression? And you can find this on the New York Times website, by the way, if you're really curious. That expression is, I've just seen 20 shows in 14 days, and I'm still single. That's what that expression is.
And did you
can't believe it!
Did you spot somebody cute in the audience, or what?
Yes, I did.
If you were at the Taylor Mack show on the night Jack saw it, please reach out to us.
We're available for matchmaking duties.
I'm the little guy in the paper. You can't miss me. It's thank you for bringing that up. It is. When that happened, I had no idea, and I was actually... I had a bad fever in that photo, actually.
Having like basically a fever.
Yeah,
dream
basically
in
that's
that
what
photo.
That was like. That was me
a
at 100 degrees.
Taylor Mack show is not unlike a fever dream.
No, for sure. And also, I just love Taylor Mack, and that's what that was. But the next morning, I got like 10 text messages at 7 in the morning, being like, "You're in the paper," with no context, and I was like,
"What did I do?"
I was like, "What are you talking? What did I?" I was really nervous that something had happened,
oh,
or
no.
You know. It's just like...
But they had found out.
Yeah. Small man habitually steals Snickers from his local Walgreens. Like, finally made it to the Daily News. They figured it out. I don't steal Snickers. I pay for them. But yeah, no, that was a highlight of the festival. Well, now that we're officially off the rails here...
Yeah, Jack.
I just want to say how much fun it's been to spend 3 consecutive weeks podcasting with the two of you. And to have shared in some of these, mind-altering, life-altering, enjoyable little moments of theatrical magic with you guys.
Well, I'm so grateful you fit the podcast into your insane schedule over the past few weeks. You've taken it to new heights.
Yeah, and now I'm going to spend more time with Craigslist and my missed connections, and I guess I'll see you guys in, and I'll see you next year. Great.
Later this year.
Okay.
We've been fired.
That's it.
You
that's
now.
My quota. That's my quota, right?
You've used it up all in January.
Just going to be. It's going to be David in a sock puppet representing me from now on. I can sleep in. I don't know why. I don't know what mood I'm in. You guys have completely twisted me up.
It's not us. It's Andrew Schneider. He changes everything.
He's the best. We're still recording, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's interesting. That's an interesting choice. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about?
What can I even talk about? I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Andrew, what do you think he's doing right now?
Did you think he slept in?
Probably podcasting about us.
He's like jogging.
Oh my God.
He would too. I would not be surprised. Yeah, exactly.
Thank God for Andrew Schneider. It's like renewed my faith in humanity.
He will save us.
Like, it's true.
The Church of Andrew.
He will save us.
We are members.
It's early acolytes.
Guys, it's a good show. If you get a chance to see it, just see it.
But here's the thing.
Oh.
Don't go in with any expectations.
Well, that's like Jason Zinnemann yelling at me. He's like, you can't write these 2 sentences. Like, this is the greatest theatrical experience of my life, but don't read my review about it.
No, for reals. Don't expect it to be great, because then it will just disappoint. Like, Jack was tweeting, like, okay, guys, I'm here, all pressure. And I was like, hey, steady, steady, buddy, buddy.
Turn it down, turn it down.
Chill out. You got to go in feeling gentle. Relaxed.
Don't squeeze the bunny too hard. Exactly. It'll die. Just...
You got to be gentle.
Lenny.
I love this version of you guys so goddamn much. It's like, what's, oh man, it's just amazing.
When teenage girls take over the podcast.
It feels like, I don't know, it's just, it's, I'm seeing new signs of you guys that Andrew's, so thank you, Andrew, for bringing this out in my favorite podcast, ladies.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Max Moo Podcast. If you have made it to this point in the episode, you are a true fan. You can find us all on Twitter, and we love hearing from you there. Max Moo is at MAXAMOO. Nicole is at Mildly Bitter, MILDLYBITTER. Jack is at Jack in Brooklyn, JACKINBROOKLYN. And I'm at Lindsay Behrens, LINDSAYBARENZ. And as promised, Andrew Schneider is at Hello Andrew JS, HELLOANDREWJS. We'll see you next week.